everyone. Welcome back to the Science and Religion Podcast. I'm Seth Brown. I've got Colin Turpin with me here. We are so excited that you're back for a third week. We're surprised that you're sticking with us. Just kidding. We love what we do, and we hope that you guys are enjoying what we're talking about. So just a brief recap on what we have talked about the past 2 weeks. This is episode three, if you were wondering. Past 2 weeks, we talked about first... We kind of introduced who we were and why we even wanted to get together and talk about these things and research these tough ideas of science and religion and how they connect with each other. Last week, you heard us talk about the supernatural versus the natural. Is there such a thing as the supernatural? How do we know those? And we also talked a lot of definitions. Again, setting the groundwork for future podcasts.
Right. So this week is going to be kind of the last of our preparation weeks. Mm-hmm. Starting with next week, we're going to head into specific topics.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in some guests eventually and try to cover our bases as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking about this week, Seth?
This week, this is going to be a really challenging podcast, I think, especially for me. I hope for you guys as well. This week, we're going to be talking about justified beliefs. That is, why do you believe what you believe? Do you have good reasons for it, or do you just believe because you believe? And this is especially important as we start to get into arguments on either side of these real controversial topics: evolution, origin of the earth, sexual identity. So why do you believe what you believe, and do you have good reasons for it? Because people today like to have good reasons for things, right?
Yeah, so this is something that's kind of hard to wrap your mind around if you've never really been exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this idea that having a belief... So we have beliefs about everything,
yeah,
right? And just because... that belief may be true, it may align with reality very well, doesn't mean you necessarily have great reasons for believing it. And so we call this the justification for the belief.
Yeah. So Colin, why don't you kind of set the groundwork? You're really good with psychology because that's what you're studying. Why don't you give us kind of the basis for how the mind works when it comes to believing or not believing
something? Sure, yeah. Glad to start. So I'm getting most of this information, actually all of this information, from a great little book called Critical Thinking, Science, and Pseudoscience from Caleb Lack and Jacques Rousseau. So this is an excellent little book. One of these people is a professor at my university. And we are talking about a lot of this idea of justified beliefs. And so he uses this great example of... there is in your dream last night, you are visited by an old gray squirrel. And this gray squirrel tells you, tomorrow, go to 7-Eleven and buy a lottery ticket because it's going to be the winning ticket.
Heck yeah, it is.
And you wake up the next day and you think, you know, I'm going to do it. The gray squirrel seemed pretty confident. That's what it is. I am choosing to believe this gray squirrel. And so you go and you buy the lottery ticket and you win the lottery. That was a true thing. So let's analyze this. Analyze this belief. So your belief that this lottery ticket was the winning ticket was a true belief. It aligned with reality very well. But your justification for believing it wasn't so great. This squirrel only appeared to you. It appeared to you once. You can't replicate it. If suddenly, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were visited by this gray squirrel in their dreams, telling them to do things, and they all became true, that might be a little different story. But since this is just you, it's hard to justify why you did that. It seems very coincidental, very random happenstance. And so let's back out a minute and think about all the beliefs that you have. You know, what is... the best band. What will the unemployment rate look like 10 years from now? What is the origin of the world? You know, all these different things we're going to be talking about. you have beliefs tied to them, and you have reasons for why you believe that. And so unless you step back and kind of meta-analyze your own thinking, it's really easy to have these unjustified beliefs. So what does this mean? There's kind of two implications for thinking about this. That number one, we can only justify our beliefs to the extent to which information is available to us. So we can only truly have reliable, dependable beliefs if that information is within our realm to know, right? That it seems kind of obvious, but we're going to get there. Hold on. And the second implication is it is our responsibility. If you think of yourself as a rational, critically thinking human being, which I'm pretty sure everyone thinks of themselves like that, it is your responsibility to accumulate evidence to support your claims as true. Mm-hmm. If you want them to be true, if you want your uncle at the family reunion to believe you when he starts saying all of his claims, you need to have enough evidence built up to justify your own beliefs.
So, two questions or two observations from my side. So what it sounds like we're trying to do, or what this book that you referenced is trying to do, is draw a line between so there's this big idea of beliefs in general. What you believe, what do you believe? And you're drawing a line between why you believe it and the results of that belief.
Right, exactly.
And we want to examine both sides, more specifically why you believe what you believe, but the idea that there's a difference between what you believe happening. Let me say it this way. Just because what you believe happens does not necessarily mean that you have good reasons for it.
Yes.
And it does not necessarily mean further that other people should believe according to your reasons why you believe.
Right.
Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So think back to the Gray Squirrel example. If that guy, after he won the lottery, started telling people about this and saying, because this happened to me, therefore, believe every gray squirrel in your dreams, right? That would be a silly conclusion to draw. Yeah.
The other observation that I had or question was, what is your favorite band? Just out of curiosity.
Oh,
do you have one?
Man. I'm a jazz guy. And so my favorite jazz trumpet player, I'm a trumpet player, and my idol growing up was a guy named Chet Baker. He was really popular in the 40s and the 50s. Fantastic guy.
Yeah. Do you have any reasons why you believe he's the best?
Oh, I do. I do, because he's a strong trumpet player, but he's also a strong singer. And interestingly, he sang almost exactly the way that he played, which is a very uncommon thing. And so he'll do a song and play a melody and then sing a melody, the same melody, and it sounds the same even though he's using different modalities. So check him out, Chet Baker.
Good reasons. It's good reasons. So Colin kind of talked to you about separating the reasons for your belief and perhaps the outcomes of your belief. I am going to talk to you a little bit more about the forces that maybe we don't recognize that cause us to believe certain things or kind of push us to believe one way or the other. So there's a famous biologist out there. He's a big evolutionary biologist. He's also an atheist. He believes, he wrote this essay called Viruses of the Mind. It's a really fascinating essay. He does a good job. His name's Richard Dawkins. He's pretty famous for his outspoken beliefs. But so in this essay, he examines the idea of religious belief and how it relates to how you can compare religious belief to viruses of the mind, to a virus. And so for a lot of people growing up, or he starts off his essay by talking about children and how when we are all really young, we have an inherent malleability about us. we tend to believe things just because we're told to believe them. And we accept them for no other reason other than the fact that our parents told us or an authority figure told us. And so Dawkins begins attacking the idea of religion in that, from his point of view, religion is a virus and that it passes from parent to child only for the sake of duplication. The only reason why religion is passed from the parent to the child is because the religion says, copy me, duplicate me. And the reason he says this is that for him, religion in and of itself, whether it's Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, whatever, there is no basis, there is no provability, there is no credibility to why we should believe that. And because of that, he calls it a virus of the mind. And I've got some interesting quotes here. And the reason that I'm bringing all this up is that Colin and I really want you to consider, like this podcast we've mentioned over and over, why you believe what you believe. And is it a result of your environment? Is it a result of the culture you're in? Or is it because you've looked at both sides of the arguments and you've come to a reasonable decision as to why you believe?
Right.
So I'm going to read this quote and then we can talk maybe a little bit more about Dawkins or move on. But so he ends his essay by saying, "The reason why person A believes one thing and person B believes another is simply and solely that A was born on one continent and B on another." It's a pretty bold statement. "Testability, evidential support, and the rest aren't even remotely considered. For scientific belief, epidemiology merely comes along afterwards and describes the history of its acceptance. For religious belief, epidemiology is the root cause." So epidemiology being the spread of a virus. So for Dawkins, he doesn't believe that science is a virus because we can come to science and evaluate the claims of science off of proven evidence, off of substantial facts, and come to a conclusion as to what is good to believe and what is bad to believe. So any thoughts
on that? So this is... This is kind of an extreme example because Dawkins is an extreme guy. But it is kind of narrating what we've been talking about, what we keep coming back to, of this idea of what is the best way to go about doing science. And as at the intersection of science and religion, how are you approaching it? From where are you approaching it? And this sounds very much like a conflict. Mm-hmm. If religion is present, science shouldn't be there, or science is stopped. Mm-hmm. And so that's maybe an interesting take that I'm sure some people hold.
So he's a big believer in religion as a science stopper.
Right.
We mentioned that idea of science stoppers last week. I was watching a video of him interviewing. I don't know exactly who it was, but it was a religious person who believed that God had created the world that God had created the world. And for that religious person, that was good enough for them. Well, Dawkins, that's not good enough for Dawkins. He wants to know why it happened, how it happened. And so in his mind, religion is, it stops the progress of science because a lot of the times religious people are content with saying, that's the way it is because that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And we don't have to really, it's a mystery. We're okay with that. We'll leave it over there and we'll kind of, dwell on the mystery and be inspired by the mysteriousness of it all. But again, for Dawkins, that's not a good enough answer. That's not a good enough, belief.
And we may see some of the other side of science stopping whenever we get to more, good and evil, or morality, right, or aesthetics.
Yeah.
You kind of see some of the flip of the religious people pushing farther, and the scientific, you know, the non-theists saying, "Well, you know, that's good enough."
Yeah, so, we can't go there. That's good.
Well, we'll talk about that later. So let's, Seth, let's talk about some of the different evidences that exist for natural versus supernatural claims.
Okay.
Because whenever we're thinking of our beliefs, like I said, my favorite musician versus predicting the economy, mm-hmm. those have very different evidences that you would support those.
Right.
So what can you think of some of the naturalistic evidences that might hold weight in something like science?
This goes back to one of our earlier conversations about science and how, for most people, what is believable is something that more than one person can experience.
Right.
And so the question is, how do you translate an experience from one person to another? For a lot of people, that's seeing the facts. That's seeing an experiment being performed. And in order for multiple people to see that, you can't live stream an experiment to the world and have everyone see. That'd be great. But so the idea is that something is repeatable. You can repeat this experiment multiple times in the same order and same fashion so that multiple people can approach the experiment, observe it, see the data for themselves, and experience objectively the same experience that you had when you came to that belief in whatever that experiment resulted in.
Yeah, I like that. So objectivity, that's very important.
Objectivity and then kind of repeatability was what I was getting at. What about you?
That's good. No, I mean, I think you nailed it on the head. Something that is repeatable, verifiable, that like we talked about earlier, the scientific community, when it comes to consensus,
there's
always a few, whenever you hear about this percentage of the scientific community agrees on this one thing, I've never seen it 100%, right? It always goes up to maybe 99% because there's always those few outliers. And so this idea that the general consensus is this.
Mm-hmm.
You see that getting to some problems whenever you have really controversial things.
Right.
Well,
and that's interesting in and of itself, the idea that there's never 100%, right?
Right. I haven't seen it.
There's never 100% certainty on a belief. Now you might be able to look at some of those cases and say, well, that guy's just he's a nutcase.
Right. So,
but I think that's really interesting, especially as it relates to science, that, man, back when Werner Heisenberg discovered his big principle, you may have heard of it, may not, it's called the uncertainty principle. And this was back when quantum physics was coming on the scene. And for the longest time, people believed that we could know for certain, according to the physical laws of science, we could know for certain how a system would react. Given enough information about the system beforehand and the information of the system itself, presently, we could predict the future.
Right.
Well, when this came on the scene, this whole principle of uncertainty entered into science, and that shook a lot of people's beliefs, foundationally. And so I think that's interesting. It's kind of a tangent, but
okay, no, that was good. How about now? So those are what we're looking for. That's the bar that's set.
Yeah.
For natural beliefs.
Yeah.
How about supernatural claims? What kind of reasons do people have for believing things that aren't verifiable, or things that are subjective, like my favorite musician?
Right.
How do people come to those?
Well, so again, this goes back to the same principle that it's I think for a lot of people it's the experience.
Okay.
The question of drawing the line between natural and supernatural is how do you translate that experience to someone else?
Sure.
And so when it comes to the supernatural, It's very much more, for most people, it's so much more individual, more subjective. That's not to say that you can't have good reasons. It's just that's the nature of supernatural.
Sure.
Is it that experience is more individual and harder to translate from person to person?
I see. So you said it's you can't have good reasons. What would those reasons be?
Man, that is a good question. So, I have my own reasons for my beliefs, and to reiterate what I've already said, it's the way that I have experienced certain things. It's the way that, I have seen lives changed.
Okay.
The way I've seen my own life changed.
Sure.
As a result of believing certain things that, that kind of lend itself towards evidence and having a reasonable belief.
Okay, so it sounds like you're saying witnessing something happen in other people,
yeah.
Witnessing something happening in yourself. I think we can easily see emotions tied into this.
Right.
You know,
and that's tricky too with emotions.
Sure. But it's a reason that a lot of people believe things is I have this emotional experience and so something must have caused that, right? And mm-hmm. so there's actually a ton that goes into why people believe things. We're only scratching the tippy top.
Well, and so you might be able to look at what I just said and say, well, isn't that going back to the old gray squirrel? Like, aren't you just, you know that you believe what is true because you have an example of it, therefore your belief behind it, the example is true.
Sure.
Well, you could certainly make that argument, but the point that I would like to add on is that this is not a one-time thing, right? You said now if thousands of people had seen old gray squirrels in their dreams, there might be, you know, you might have to start considering this,
mm-hmm.
and you see, at least I have seen that same kind of evidence in multiple people.
So it's persevering, and it's in multiple people. Sure. Yeah. Okay, great. So all of this to say, the reason why we're talking about this is be thinking about the reasons why you believe things.
Mm-hmm.
That's we're always going to tie back
into
that. Why certain beliefs that you hold, maybe it's just harder to believe the alternative, and so you just believe what you believe. And, gets into cognitive dissonance and a lot of other stuff. So let's take another step back and think about, go back to what we were talking about last week of the best way to approach science.
Okay.
What was it? Methodological naturalism?
Yes, sir.
So in methodological naturalism, as we defined it last week, it's that this worldview that the best way of doing science, the best way of answering these why questions is to have an underlying assumption that there is no supernatural. Because it is harder to justify, maybe the justifications are weaker for supernatural things. It is more easy to deceive yourself, more likely to get things wrong if you have poor justification. So why not just stick with the best justification?
Mm-hmm.
So how does this tie into that?
Well, so to go back to the definition, methodological naturalism, having this kind of base assumption that all that there is natural, it goes back to what I was saying earlier in that having this assumption is a easy way to transmit experiences.
Sure.
It's an easy way to spread ideas at a base level that we can all come to this place, and experience, see these, discoveries at the same level. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's a little convoluted.
Yeah,
maybe.
No, that definitely helps.
Okay.
Great. So I guess, to wrap up, let's spend a few minutes talking about if it's easy and reliable to spread experiences,
mm-hmm.
only assuming that the natural world is what we have.
Right.
And if it's easier to justify
those
things, why in the world would any rational scientific thinker believe in supernatural things? We're gonna get a little bit personal here. I'll start because some people just may not know, or you know, just what if I consider myself a scientific critical thinker, which I do,
mm-hmm.
I could hear someone asking me, why in the world would you believe in this?
Mm-hmm.
So for this example, I'm just going to set aside for the moment the emotional experiences that I've had. I'm going to set aside the experiences that I've seen in other people, mm-hmm. which there has certainly been a lot, and that has certainly contributed to why I believe what I believe. My upbringing, if you will. So as objectively as I can, I'm going to try and set those things aside. And for me, the one of the strongest reasons, maybe the strongest reasons that I believe in a God personally, is my change in behavior, is how okay. behaviorally, through my habits, through my wants, through my needs, I've seen an incredible shift after becoming a Christian of what makes me content and what behaviors that I do that end up helping me and which ones end up hurting me. And so essentially I'm finding that, as Seth said earlier, repeatably, I've seen this pattern happen all over my life, and it's going to continue to happen because biblically I'm sinful and I'm going to keep messing up. Yeah. That whenever I turn away from chasing and pursuing the God of the Bible with my whole heart, my life spirals into destruction.
Flounders.
That may be a bit dramatic.
Flounders.
But yeah, it I definitely have seen severe consequences and terrible hardships and things that are not saying that Christianity is your life is roses and happy and super easy, because right. it is there's definitely some hardships with that as well. But it is I've seen an incredible change behaviorally that I can look back and say, at these times, because I did this, there was that change. And so that's really one of the strongest evidences. If you want to read more about why people, or as Christians, why you should know that you're a Christian, the book of 1 John is all about that. Yeah. So that's a good thing to look at.
Absolutely.
So, Seth.
Man, I'm reading this book right now by Stephen Barr. I actually quoted it last week, or is it the week before? I can't remember. But basically what he does is he examines modern scientific discoveries and how what they've done is, so up until these modern scientific discoveries, the world was thought to be able to be explained away according to laws. There was a lot of determinism involved, a lot of Newtonian physics. So everything kind of has a cause and an effect. And so up until these, there's five or so discoveries that were made in the early 20th century. I mean, that was the prevailing belief, was that everything was eventually going to be explained away by science. Well, Barr begins talking about these discoveries. And as I've read through this book, I mean, I've come to the conclusion, I'm going to briefly mention why I'm even bringing up Barr, and then I'll get into my actual reason. Man, the arguments that Barr puts forth point me to consider that there is something else out there besides what we just see naturally. And if you want those arguments, I can get them to you, but I have to believe that there is something else out there. I don't think science can explain everything about what we see in the world today. I just don't think it can, that there is something out there. And so because of that, the question is, well, why do I believe that something out there is a God? Why do I have to believe that? And I've got this great quote that I want to read. It's from this book that is grappling with the idea of evil in the world.
Which we'll talk about in a few weeks.
Which we will talk about in a few weeks. So it's grappling with evil in the world, and how could you believe in God if there's evil, and so on and so forth. And so one of the ideas, or one of the things that I see in the world today that really kind of puts the nail in the coffin, okay. so to speak,
yes.
for me and my own belief in God, is this idea that the quote goes, "The mystery of evil in the world is very difficult when we believe in a good God. But the problem of goodness seems to us impossible when we do not." And so for some people, that may not be a good enough reason. But for me, man, that author, I think, nails it on the head.
What was the name of the book?
The name of the book, of Barr, yeah. is called Modern Physics and Ancient Faith. Okay. That is a fantastic read. Even it's a great read. Anyways.
Okay. So if that was a bit too personal for you guys, we're going to, in the future, in the, over the next few weeks, stay more objective. This is just kind of to help get to know us, get to know your hosts a little bit more. So we are going to next week start hitting the individual topics. So be excited for that.
Do we have what we're going to talk about? Are we going to start with evolution, Cole?
I don't know. To be determined.
TBD.
We'll see the order. We may switch them up even after we record them.
Yeah.
So keep sticking around. We have only begun this podcast.
Oh, my friends.
We're getting to the exciting part. Absolutely. So,
thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
We will see you next week.
Cheers.